Football Q&A with Dave Davutovic from the Herald Sun on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Yes, good afternoon and welcome to Football Q&A. And our special guest today is a voice that's very familiar to FNR listeners, albeit on another program, but he's been kind enough to join us today ahead of his massive move over to the West. And I speak, of course, of co-host of Football Bosses, or should we say ex-co-host now, Tony Pinata. Welcome.
Thanks, David. I'm looking forward to it.
So you've just been appointed the chief executive of Perth Glory, having left Sydney FC a year or so ago. Very exciting time for you, mate. How long was this in the pipeline?
It happened really quickly. Peter Philopoulos was appointed CEO of Football Victoria. He's coming back. He had a fantastic three-year stint there. And Tony Sage called me up and we had a bit of a chat. And then he was in town last week, last Thursday, and had lunch. And by the end of the lunch, we had agreed terms. I was on a plane to Perth the next night.
Fantastic. Now, Tony, you were a regular contributor on my Studs Up blog over the course of the journey, and I always appreciated that. So I'll fire some curly ones at you. Oh, it's a bit hot and cold, bit on and off at the moment, Studs Up. So maybe we'll revisit it next year. We'll see how we go. Will you ask me questions if it's back on?
Yeah, I'd always used to sort of look into it. I thought it was a good chance for fans to vent. I mean, although there's so multitude of venting applications out there, isn't there?
There is, and it did get me in a bit of trouble too, Tony, hence I had to just call off a little bit. So, look, you can join in the conversation. We obviously will talk about Tony's time at Sydney FC as well as what he's got to look forward to at Perth Glory. But Tony's obviously been involved with the game for a long, long time, so we will talk about the state of the game, and obviously expansion is a really hot topic at the moment, the second division and whatnot. So if you want to join in the conversation, the talkback number is 03-9944-9999, or send us a message via Twitter at @FNR_radio, @FNR_radio. So, Tony, you've been an avid cycler in the last year or so since leaving Sydney. Are you going to cycle to Perth?
I'm thinking about it. It'll take me about 3 weeks, but I need to get the Ks up. I've only been doing 300 or 400 Ks a week.
A little Tour de France.
Yeah, just Tour de France. So hopefully it's pretty flat across the Nullarbor.
I did the drive about 13 years ago. Yeah, it is pretty flat, so you'll be safe. You'll be able to kick back. When are you moving over there?
At this stage, around about the 10th, 11th of June. I've already sort of started discussions with Tony Popovich, who has been appointed as a coach, and bits and pieces. But as you know, football doesn't stop.
The biggest of enemies you guys pretty much would have been only, 18 or so months ago, and now you're working together. Is that the first time you've spoken to him?
No, I mean, we've crossed paths in our days in Sydney, and I mean, it's always been very professional. He had a job to do at Wanderers, had a job to do at Sydney, and, off the park, a lot of the clubs try and work together because we need to work together. We need to build this game. On the park, that's a different story, but off the park, with Tony and more so with his CEO, John Tatsimus, we had a good working relationship.
We're speaking with Tony Pinata, the newly appointed Perth Glory CEO, and also a regular here on FNR Football Nation Radio. We'll call him the ex-host or co-host of Football Bosses, along with my good friend Michael Zapponi. A fantastic show you guys had. The relationship between the CEO and the coach. A lot of CEOs, particularly early on in the A-League piece, didn't have a lot of football nous. Now, you've been a football man for a long time. You played a big part, obviously, in Graham Arnold coming over to Sydney FC and laying the foundations for their, fantastic success over the last couple of years. How important is that dynamic to the success of a club?
Oh, it's very important. Three most important people at a club are your football coach, chairman, CEO, and the chairman has a role and responsibility. So really the running of the club is left to the CEO. and the football department is run by the coach, and there needs to be that sort of relationship, because times do get tough. You know, you're going to, you know, win some games, lose some games, and it's how you get through that. I had a fantastic relationship with Graham. We spoke, you know, every day we spoke, maybe sometimes three or four. You know, we had our ups and downs, as you do. But first and foremost, we were always honest and upfront, and you know, just dialogue and communicate. And you know, it's great that, you know, sort of we still speak. Had a, you know, really good 15-20 minute chat with him today about football in general. So it needs to be strong. The bond needs to be strong.
You guys could have pulled the trigger on Arnie at Sydney FC, couldn't you?
Yeah, in that second year, a lot of people saying, you know, what's happening, et cetera. Because, you know, Arnie came in after the Frank Farina era. We made the grand final. We got smashed by Melbourne, Melbourne Victory that afternoon. And then the next year we started off well. I'll never forget, we had the derby at Parramatta. Shane Smelt scores in the last minute. We win 2-1. You know, we're second on the table, a point behind. I don't think we won. I think we won one more game in the last 10 after that. You know, we started Champions League, et cetera. And it just felt like it just spiraled out of control. And then when it does, it's how you handle it, et cetera. And there's a lot of innuendo, a lot of speculation. But I'll be honest, it never did cross my mind, all the boards, to get rid of Graham. You know, we know what Graham was capable of. He'd never been in that position as well, and he was the first to admit. I really had a good heart and heart with Graham, because I'll be honest, the relationship did strain a little bit between Graham and I.
At what stage? At the end of that season?
Yeah. You know, I just felt Graham, he was starting to become grumpy towards the media, etc. I was really upset with Graham about his interview he did with Adam Peacock, and how. And so we had a really good
chat.
That
was the last game of the season, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, and I just laid it out. I said, look, he's our voice. He is the focal point of Sydney FC, he was, you know, because he's always in the media, etc. And, you know, the way he portrays is what people expect. And the players react to that. They do. They do react to a head coach. So, you know, he went on holidays. And he admits it now. He had a really good heart-to-heart with his wife, who's a fantastic person. You know, he came back and he actually apologised. And he said, no, I was wrong. You know, I'm going to change. Look what happened. You know, look what's happened since. And, you know, I was rapt to hear that and say, right, mate, forget it. Because I'm very much about, you know, forgetting about looking in the rearview mirror. I'm about looking in through that windscreen, looking forward. And, you know, we put it down and, you know, we got a great squad together and ended up just losing the one game and winning the grand final. Mm.
So at that stage, you've had the chat to Arnie and said, listen, you know, you've in a sense got to pull your head in, but... Was there any?
You can't really say that to Arnie, but I, I did. Look, I said to him, "I'm not happy the way you're being, you know, sort of thought about in the media and with fans, etc." So I tried to just sort of put in that situation, but so it was good about it.
So at that stage, were there any discussions at all with, you know, Scott Barlow, the chairman, or anything like that about?
No. There was never an intent. Mm-hmm. Graham had a 3-year deal and. We knew Graham was the man to change things. And, you know, things take 2 or 3 years. We were, you know, maybe, you know, in the first year we achieved to make the grand final. We had a great year. Second year, sort of a bit of a lull. You know, we were always, you know, hell-bent on Arnie Steyn.
Yeah, and he certainly came back a different person. Not only did he apologise, but he obviously did a lot of work in the background, and it's been pretty well publicised. He got a couple of mentors involved, both personally and for the team. And since then, I don't remember him snapping at all with the media.
No, he was great. We had, you know, Mike, who came in as our emotional sort of in, you know, person.
Mike Conway of Wiggles fame.
Yeah, Mike Conway, Wiggles fame.
Did you do some Wiggles dances? Or?
No. But he was fantastic because What he also added was that the players could go and talk to someone else besides the coaching staff, yep. besides the CEO, besides someone else. And, you know, it was very much that and Mike was around the club a lot. And whether it worked, well, it did work, but whether that was the reason, but I think everything factors worked. And one thing I did say to Graham as well is just focus on getting 3 points every week. Don't worry about, you know, the grass at Macquarie, you know, where we're training base, that is too long or too short. Don't worry about this, that, or the other. Just focus on that. We'll worry about everything else and we'll make sure that we deliver for you. And that was very, very important.
Massive club with massive expectations, Sydney FC, and that's ultimately why Graham Arnold felt the pressure. You know, you obviously as the CEO would have felt the pressure at various stages. How do you compare it to the situation at Perth Glory you're walking into now?
Yeah, I mean, Perth's it's got a rich history of football. We know what they achieved in the NSL. The fans still crave that. They still talk about it. They still talk about, you know, packed out NIB Stadium. So there's a lot of expectation. The fans have been sort of hanging out for some success for, you know, since the start of the A-League. And they know what success is given their fortunes in the NSL. So, you know, there is. It just doesn't have the, you know, I don't know at this stage, but it doesn't have that media. I mean, Sydney's very much a lot of the media's there, as you know, Dave, in Sydney and, you know, and, you know, just the population and everything. But wherever you go, I was in Wellington for 3 years, there's pressure there. There's pressure in every club, in every football, because, you know, you've got fans, you've got media, you've got to deliver. And you know, I'm looking forward to the challenge.
And as a football purist, I mean, you would remember as if it were yesterday when Perth Glory came on the scene and played at the old-fashioned Perth Oval, which was a football field, an Aussie rules field at the time, and just basically wowed, you know, Australia with pretty much a full house from the get-go, 17,000 with a really local side, with Gary Meraki, the local coach at the helm, you know, who were in many ways a forerunner to the A-League.
Oh, they were. I actually had the pleasure of meeting Gary on Friday night and had a good chat, and he's invited me to Perth, Italia for a dinner, so I'm looking forward to that. But, I used to follow Brunswick Juventus in the NSL. I still remember in Cantalupo, you know, scoring the goals to win the, I think it was 85.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've got a good memory. But, Perth were phenomenal in those years.
So take us back to your first football memories and how you got into it and what, I guess, inspired you to take this path.
Yeah, my dad used to play in down at the Punt Road. We're Victory Train. They used to play for Richmond there, and so I used to, you know, go down and watch him play. And I've always loved the game. I played AFL sort of till I was about 13 and then started playing football and, you know, played all the way through in locally. And I used to go to, you know, sort of the NSL days and, you know, watch Brunswick Juventus, the old Pat Bannon days and, you know, Sean Keogh when he was, you know, goalkeeper. He actually came and played with us as well at Box Hill. So, yeah, it's just a rich history of football. And they were good days, you know. Sunday afternoon, you know, Olympic Park number 2. Where the Greyhounds race, I was there.
Fantastic. Were you any good, Tony, on the field?
I could score. I was my only downfall and why I probably didn't make any better, you know, career out of it was I was just too slow. But you give me the ball in the 18-yard box, it'll be in the back of the net.
Bit of a predator, Del Piero style.
I wish.
Fantastic. And you talk about Graham Arnold, and again, you're going to be, I guess, have the opportunity to work with a fantastic coach in Tony Popovich. A little bit sort of out of sight, out of mind at the moment, Popovich, because, of course, he sensationally quit the Wanderers on the eve of the season to take a job over in Turkey, which many people were baffled by. I thought it was, whilst it was a risk, it was a calculated one, because he's gone to a country that was, the Super League's ranked 10th in Europe, ahead of Eredivisie, Belgium, Scotland, and some of these comps. So if it worked out, he was, you know, one step away from potentially one of Europe's top leagues or top teams. As it turned out, it didn't pan out, and he's been out of a job for the last 6 or so months. You've spoken to him a lot over the last week or so. What's Tony Popovich like at the moment?
Hungry. He's a winner. Very much in the mould of Graham Arnold. He, I don't know. He made that decision, and I haven't spoken to him about it, but looking from outside, he probably thought, let's give this a go. It didn't work out, but I was wrapped when one of the things I asked when I was having a lunch with Tony Sage was, you know, where we're at with Tony Popovich, because it's important, you know, you get a good coach as well. And they were very close. And it was great that, you know, when I arrived in Perth, he had agreed and signed as well. And I think he's a fantastic acquisition in the coaching ranks. And I think Perth were lucky to have him.
A hungry Tony Popovich. I mean, that sounds like really, you know, something ominous for opponents of Perth Glory. What's the aim next year? Is it to win the title?
I mean, you're going to, you know, every year to win the title. It is about winning trophies. Now, whether we're going to win next year or you know, 2 or 3 years, but it is that, definitely. It's about winning the championship. It's winning the grand final. It's making the Champions League. They're the three things that you want. You know, you've got the FFA Cup as well. But ultimately, it's, you know, the way we play in Australia, it's winning that grand final. Mm. Definitely, it's about winning trophies.
How did you view, you personally, and I guess Sydney FC view Tony Popovich when you were involved with the Sky Blues? I mean, it was just an immense rivalry, and, you know, those derbies were just must-watch, whether it was at Parramatta Stadium or at Allianz, and, you know, watching it on the TV for the most part, the atmosphere would come through, and there was just such an intensity in the games, and two fantastic coaches, tactically savvy and the rest of it. Obviously a massive rivalry, but obviously would have been a respect in the background about the way when he's went about his business.
Oh, definitely. I mean, he's they were fantastic club, Wanderers. You know, they came on the scene, and in the first year they won the Premier's Plate. Mm. Those derbies, I don't know if you've ever been to one.
Which was your first season, wasn't it, at Sydney?
No. Yes, it was. Yeah. Yep. I remember Del Piero scored the... Del Piero scored the 1-0. The penalty against Kovic. I can name them all. But all the games that we beat the Wanderers, although they really had the edge on us in the first few years.
Might be a good conversation starter with Popper.
Yeah, but they were fantastic derbies. And I've been to a lot of big games in Europe, and that atmosphere was electric. Yeah. You know, when we had sell out 40,000 at Allianz and even Parramatta 20,000, it was intimidating. You know, the RBB there was intimidating. That's it drew fans to, you know, as soon as the fixtures came out, that's what people wanted to go and watch, that those derbies. And, you know, 60,000 at ANZ Stadium, where they lost 4-0, was enormous. You know, the massive crowd. It has died off a little bit. I mean, the crowds haven't been there, and I'm hoping that, you know, that rivalry can reignite, because it's very, very important.
You mentioned Del Piero. You played a massive role in getting him here, and I've spoken about it a lot in terms of what the part that the Wanderers played in terms of expansion and just what competition does. And we'll touch on expansion and the state of the game later on. But just firstly on Perth Glory, is there the possibility that Glory will sign a, you know, big name marquee player for next season?
Yeah, I get this. I get this question asked a lot. I think it's difficult for any A-League club now to sign a player like Del Piero. when we signed Alessandro, you know, the Chinese market wasn't as it was. MLS wasn't paying the dollars they're paying. It's very, very difficult to get someone. I know they got this $3 million fund. It's not going to do anything, to be honest. Are they going to really give it to one club to go out and get a player? I think it's really up to the clubs to go out and then find the player, not FFA. I don't think FFA should be going out talking to players' agents and stuff like that. Let the clubs worry about it. And, you know, if they go out and find someone, then go to the FFA and say, look, we've signed in this player, we need, you know, some help. But I don't think at the moment, the way the game is, that you could go out and get a Fernando Torres or Wayne Rooney, who are, you know, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I mean, you know,
it's Iniesta.
Iniesta. These players are getting massive money. You know, we looked at Andrea Pirlo when he came out from Juventus. We looked at closely, but, you know, he went to New York City for, I think it was like $7 million US net. Clubs can't afford it here.
Is that what it would have cost to get him here?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know if you can sell the lifestyle, et cetera. I mean, New York's not a bad city either. you know, with Alessandro, you know, and you got a hats off to Lou Sticker as well, because he planted that seed in May that year, and he met with his brother, and his brother actually said, yeah, Malu, you know, in Italian, he said, thank you, but I can't see Alessandro come and play in the A-League. Mm. And when the opportunity came, and I said to Lou, just send an email to his brother, see what he's doing, because he hadn't had a club at the moment. They replied straight away and going, we're interested. And we sold them, you know, the project, as Alessandro liked to call it, about coming and becoming what David Beckham did in the MLS. Mm-hmm. And he did that with the A-League. He still spoken about now. He's still revered, et cetera. You know, a lot of people said, oh, Sydney spent a lot of money. Yeah, we did. You know, it was $3 million a year. But I'll tell you what, it's come back in tenfold at that club, because it gave Sydney the brand recognition. Members went up. Crowds were like nearly 18,000. Mm. Sponsors, et cetera. And it grew that revenue so far that even though the costs went up, the revenue was you know, a lot more. So in actual fact, Alessandro probably didn't cost us that much.
Mm. And you're forever associated with him, or Sydney FC is your now ex-club. But,
yep.
I mean, and that's just that cumulative effect that season of Del Piero and then Shinji Ono and then Emil Heskey. I mean, yep. I'll never forget. That was the pre-season shot, you know, those three guys. And just seeing them in their shirts to launch the season, it's like, wow, the A-League has arrived.
Well, I mean, I remember the first game against Newcastle, our first home game. We'd gone to Wellington and got thumped 2-0. We went, well, this is not a good start.
The one and only time the Fox Sports commentary team has gone across the Tasman. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, exactly. Although Alessandro, the tradition, any new player to a club has to sing a song. He was brilliant. He sang this song in Italian. Everyone's gone, wow, you know. So he can sing as
well. What
was it? It's an Italian song, Dipinto di Blu. So,
can you give us a rendition or...?
No, I can't sing. So, you know, we got spanked over there and came back. And I remember we had a charity game before Newcastle on Allianz against UNICEF. It was UNICEF versus Fox Sports. I actually scored a ripper volley too, just by coincidence. Anyway, gone in the change rooms after the game, got changed, came out suit and tie to go up to the chairman's function, and I looked at a crowd. I couldn't believe it. Like, record crowd, 30-odd thousand, 35,000, and he scores that free kick. We end up losing the game 3-2. Heskey scores, and I'm sitting next to Patrick Delaney, who's the CEO of Fox, and he goes, this is what's all about, Tony. Look at this, you know. And they were right on board with it. It was electric. It really, you know, we had really some poor seasons before. But, you know, Alessandro came. Look at the airport scene was amazing when he arrived. You know, the Sydney Morning Herald had the whole back page and front page in the Gazzetta dello Sport, pink colour.
La Gazzetta del Piero, like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was amazing coverage. And it was like every channel, everyone knew about it. And, you know, all his games were televised, our games, Sydney FC, games were televised, I'll say our, but... they were all televised back into Italy. So it was phenomenal, absolutely.
Well, one of the lesser-known legacies, I've spoken to players and coaches even in the local NPL competitions, and guys that have come from overseas, a few of them have actually said, always asked the question, why did you come? And quite a few of them have said, because of Del Piero. And I sort of ask why, and they say... him coming to Australia indicated to me that there are football opportunities in Australia. So I don't think we actually realise the true legacy of this guy.
Oh, phenomenal. I didn't know this, but when we signed Milos Ninkovic, he said my favourite player was Alessandro. I said, okay, well, you can have the number 10.
And fantastic.
Fair to say he's given that number 10 a good... yeah, good shout as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Great times with Del Piero, and let's hope that we can get some more marquee players. Let's hope we can grow the game in coming years. And we will talk about that after the break, Tony, the state of the game. If anybody wants to send in some questions at FNR_radio, or you can call us on 9944 9999, of course, 03 for Melbourne. You're listening to Football Q&A. More after the break.
Football Q&A with Dave Davutovich from the Herald Sun on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Yes, welcome back to Football Q&A. David Davidovic, your host, but we've got an even more special guest alongside me today in Tony Pignata, the ex-Football Bosses co-host and newly appointed CEO of
Can I do
Earth
the
Glory.
Football Boss show anymore?
Well, you can. I just assumed that you would have to relinquish responsibilities, Tony, but do you have some news for us on that front?
No. I know Zappa's going to the World Cup. So anyway, we'll see when August comes.
Well, maybe we can expand FNR into Western Australia and you can do the show from over there.
Why not?
Very good. Well, we'll speak to our superiors over here when we're off air. But we've spoken at length about Perth Glory and what's coming up there and the expectations. There's been a few reports and murmurs in recent weeks and months about Tony Sage, the owner, potentially selling some, if not all, of the club. Will he be the owner at the start of next season?
Yeah, I mean, Tony hasn't expressed anything. I know, you know, Tony's a very, very proud Western Australian. Loves the A-League. He's been there since day one. He's put a lot of money into that club. I can't see anything more than Tony wanting is to hold that trophy. Sure, if investors come in to help out because he's a sole owner, maybe he'll look at that. But, I don't think he'll relinquish it as far as I know.
There's been a lot of, I mean, the fact that he's getting offers for the club, and my understanding is there have been at least two, if not three, offers from, you know, various investors, be it individuals or consortiums. And it's happened across the board with a number of clubs. What does that say to you about the state of the game, Tony?
I mean, Adelaide just sold. Newcastle sold last week. Last season. There's a lot of interest from overseas investors to get into Australian football. Sometimes we can be too negative about our game, but saying that, there is a lot of work to do, and I felt that this season especially has been a bit of a lull in terms of crowds and metrics, but. You know, sometimes we sort of analyse ourselves and we're too hard on ourselves.
Interesting time for the game. The FFA has opened up the expansion process. It is a formal process now. We've been waiting for some time, pretty much since Ange Postecoglou started speaking about it in his, or writing about it rather, in his book, Changing the Game, released a couple of years ago. And a lot of other things have obviously happened along the journey. But the EOIs are due on May 24th, so about a week from now. A few timelines in between, roughly about October, they're expected to announce the two new bids. What are your views on expansion? Where do we need to expand to? How much do we need to expand by? Where does the game need to go?
I think expansion is it's probably a few years. It should have been done a few years ago, but it's needed. And we need to go from 10 to 12 to 14 to 16. I think 16 might be the optimal sort of number. I know, you know, look at all the amount of, you know, sort of investors who want to get into the game. Mm. You know, there's not like one or two. There's, you know, four in Sydney. There's, you know, Wollongong. There's Southwest. There's MacArthur. And there's
Southern Expansion.
Southern Expansion. You know, there's just four there. You've got three in Victoria. You've got Team 11. You've got one out west. And you've got South Melbourne, Tasmania, Brisbane. So there's a lot of, you know, people wanting to get involved in the game. So it's fantastic. And I know that the A-League is going to only expand by two, and the shortlist will come out in June with the preferred sort of bidders. And they're spending a lot of money doing all these bids at the moment. They're all getting their documents and their plans, et cetera. I just hope that, you know, the ones that don't miss out, that they can sort of still be there and the FFA can still nurture them along, because ultimately we need to grow. Now, what cities need to, you know, be involved? I think given the population, et cetera, it'll be a Sydney and Melbourne. That's just my view, because it will need to sort of create those sort of, environment. But you know, saying that, you know, we've on our show Football Bosses, we've spoken to Matt Windley from Team 11. We spoke to Robert Beltecki from Tasmania, and Tasmania Bin's got a great, I suppose, opportunity there. But it's really up to FFA and how they view things.
Second division, Tony. It's there's nothing formal about it. There's been a lot of discussions. There's the AAFC group that's popped up, which is basically the umbrella group for the NPL clubs. We've also got the PFA, who have done cost analysis and have been on the record talking about the second division also. No one really knows what a second division may look like, but considering we're going to have, I mean, you mentioned, you know, a chunk of the bids, my understanding is we're going to have at least 10, if not more, bids for this expression of interest. Is this the opportunity to actually put the second division on the agenda?
I think it should be on the agenda. I think it should start the process, and I think you know, there needs to be work done to develop the second division. We need to give these clubs, such as Perth Italia, such as Adelaide City, the Strikers, South Melbourne, your Heidelbergs, your Melbourne Knights, some opportunity to make the next grade. Now, whether they make the next grade or not, well, that's up to them. And yes, it does cost a lot of money, but if these clubs can fund it and go to their communities, to their sponsors, all it's going to do is grow the game, it's going to improve the players, and I think it'll work. I really do. Now, before you ask me about promotion relegation, that's something that has to come in. You need clubs, can't just sit there and sort of just, you know, lull year after year. There needs to be some pressure on them that if they don't get points, they're back in second division. So that's down the track, and it has to be thought properly, everyone involved, on how they do that. But I think it should happen.
I attended the PFA Football History Conference yesterday, which was a fantastically run event and had some great guest speakers, Brendan Schwab, Ron Smith, amongst others. And Brendan spoke about the second division, and the PFA has been around for 25 years, and they've been involved in a lot of actions with players, you know, chasing up money and players not being paid and whatnot. Not just from the NSL days, but also in the A League, and Gold Coast and North Queensland are probably the two that come to mind. And Schwabby said, you know, that's one thing that we want to avoid in setting up the second division. Need to ensure that, you know, it's commercially robust, both in terms of the clubs individually and collectively. So I think that's something that certainly we have to bear in mind moving forward, I would have thought.
Oh, definitely, because, I mean, okay, players play this game because they love it. Mm. But ultimately they've got families, they've got mortgages, everything, and it is their employment, and that's what they're employed to do. So, you know, these clubs need to make sure that they do look after the players, and like any employee wants to be looked after by the employer, so they have to do that. And there should be repercussions against clubs that don't fulfil those needs.
Yeah. Interesting one, the old promotion relegation second division, but these are the issues that need to be discussed here and now. And I think, as you said, the fact that we've avoided expansion is a big reason why we've had the lull coming into this season. But just generally speaking, Tony, the state of the game, obviously you had a unique vantage point. From your time in New Zealand, I guess you can compare it to, you know, with Wellington, you can compare it to, you know, the New Zealand football and whatnot. The state of the game in general, the Socceroos are going to be going to the World Cup. What are your views on where the game's at?
I still think it's pretty healthy. We've made another World Cup. You know, everyone's sort of bagging the Socceroos, but in the game and the state and you know, from a playing level. But we've made another World Cup. Italy's not there. Holland's not there. Australia is.
Chile's not there.
Chile's not there. So, you know, people, as I said before, we can be too hard on ourselves. Yes, we'd love to get 20,000 at every game and fill the stadiums, the stadiums up. We'd love to have, you know, 40, 50, 60,000 members, you know, like Richmond got 93,000 members. We'd love to, but, you know, we've got to put everything in perspective as well. And, you know, I think the FFA need to work a lot closer with the clubs. For me, for 1 year being outside one season, because I finished up in August last year and sort of coming back into this season, what I've, you know, haven't liked is the relationship between the clubs and the FFA. And I think the FFA has a lot to answer for in this. I think they probably haven't handled it well, the relationships, and you know, they've let it fester too long where the clubs have arced up, and, you know, they're a strong body now. It should never have got to where it's got now, where you've got, you know, FIFA and AFC coming in, etc. That to me, has really shown that, you know, that there's something there brewing. And, you know, we need to sort of keep a lot of these things in-house, but it's been aired and et cetera. And, you know, I don't know if the relationship can be sort of fixed, but it needs to be done quickly.
Is the FFA too Sydney-centric?
Yes. Yep, definitely. I lived in Sydney for 5 years, but it is, and that's the feeling out there. Look, you know, the main media in Sydney as well, but it is, I think it is Sydney-centric.
That's a bit harsh, Tony.
What?
Main media in Sydney.
No. Well, they are, except for you, Dave, you and Michael Lynch here.
Yeah, thanks, yeah. Mate, very kind. No, yeah. it's you're right. It's It always has been the power base, and potentially will be for the foreseeable future. Independent A-League, you've had a really, I guess, unique vantage point working for the clubs. Is this the solution to, I guess, some, if not all, of our A-League problems?
Yeah. Look, I don't know enough of what has happened in those sort of meetings, et cetera, and what they're proposing. I know that it's been run primarily by the owners. I think I went to New York with my family back in 2016, and I had a meeting with Don Garber, who's the commissioner of MLS. And he was fantastic, gave me half an hour, and I met with him in his office. And he said, you know, his New York accent, he said, Tony, the main issue with the A-League, it's not independent. You know, every league in the world, you know, the EPL, even the MLS, they're all independent.
Bundesliga, Serie A, J-League, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, there's your answer. It has to be independent. And we've got to ensure that the people running it know what's it all about. And they have to have close ties with their local federation or else. But it has to be independent. So, you know, the marketing, everything around it is built around that league.
Mm-hmm. I guess there's a perception out there from people that it'll be an independent A-League will basically be, you know, the club owners who will just sit there and just start pulling the strings and doing whatever they want to do. My view is that that's grossly unfair to the A-League owners. We've actually got a really impressive, high-caliber group of owners from, headlined by the City Football Group, the owners of Manchester City, New York City, 20% of Yokohama, F. Marinos, etc. They've got clubs in Spain and Uruguay as well. The Melbourne Victory Ownership Group, headlined by Mario Bison and Anthony Di Pietro, the chairman, two highly respected businessmen in Australia. Sydney FC, David Traktovenko and his son-in-law, Scott Barlow. Paul Lederer at Western Sydney. Martin Lee, the understated owner, whose company, the Ledman Group, is worth billions at Newcastle Jets. You just spoke about Tony Sage, who over the last, 12 years has probably tipped in tens of millions of dollars. I've been critical of Sagey as well, but he's put his money where his mouth is. These guys are clearly passionate about the game, and there's some decent knowledge there. They're clearly going to make decisions that are obviously in the best interest of the club, but also in the best interest of Australian football, you would think.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, as I said, you know, them together, it's a strong body. We probably don't give them enough kudos that they, you know, think that they're going to run it. No, they'll do it properly, because ultimately it's how they can generate more income, etc. So I think it's very, very important, and I think it'll happen. It might be 12 months, 18 months, but it will happen.
Mm. Don Garber, the chat with him half an hour. I've had a phone conversation with him and found him highly engaging. I think he's neighbours with Tim Cahill, if I'm not mistaken, over in
New Jersey,
yeah. What else did you learn?
I haven't seen him on Tim's Instagrams.
Timmy or yeah. Don?
No, I haven't seen Don on Tim's Instagrams, have I?
Yeah, no, Timmy's pretty low profile at the moment. Yeah. So you've got to earn your stripes. You don't just get on Timmy's Instagram willy-nilly, do you?
Yeah.
But what else did you learn from Don Garber? I found him to be really highly engaging.
We had a really good chat about expansion was one, and the amount of companies and investors that want to invest in there is just amazing.
They're queuing up, aren't they?
He has to say no. He has to say no all the time because and it's not cheap to invest because you've got to build a stadium, you've got to build facilities, everything like that. So no, and they're queuing up. I mean, they've got another couple of teams. You've got Nashville coming in. Mm-hmm. So it's growing and growing.
David Beckham's Miami,
yep.
Which is, you know, it's the old, we talk about Del Piero before. That's almost the ultimate legacy, isn't it? The guy's come there. He's played for 4 or 5 years, made a massive impact for the club and the league in general. And then, you know, 10 years later, he comes back and tips his money in and starts a club. And that's going to be a rock star club.
It will be, you know, headlined by David. But, yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of people wanting to get into the, and they're growing and growing. You know, you've got Nassau, which is the one underneath, and that's separate sort of league as well. But teams are coming through that as well.
Yeah, that's another good lesson, I reckon, for Australian football, because the NASL, that is, as you said, a separate entity and a second division of sorts, but there is no tie-in with the MLS. So I think there's some legal stoushes going on or about to kick off as we speak. So I think a good lesson for the situation here with regards to the expansion process and, you know, the potential second division, got to face these issues head on now, or else down the track there could be some real issues.
Definitely. And I'm talking about the MLS, well, that's one of their critical things as well. They don't have that, as you know, it's a pretty close shop. You know, and they've sort of, you know, sort of expanding and et cetera. But yeah, we'll see how it all plays out.
The A-League clubs, from a football viewpoint and a production line to the national teams, I mean, Graham Arnold said something interesting a few months ago along the lines of the A-League. I'm not sure if he was referring specifically to Sydney FC or the A-League in general, you know, wasn't sort of a production line for players. Obviously, we saw a lot more younger players come through the NSL, didn't we, than we have with the A-League for a variety of reasons. But what's your view in terms of the A-League as a football development product?
Well, out of the 26, 20 have got A-League experience. So it is a production line.
The Socceroos extended squad.
Yeah. 20 out of the 26 have played in the, in the A-League. You know, the days of, you know, your Mark Viduka's, Bresciano's, Vince Grella's, Harry Kuehl, I mean, we still talk about Lucas Neal's. I can go on. I mean, it's fantastic, you know, and to watch them in 2006, I'll never ever forget. They had to go and play overseas because there was no A-League. They went out and did it hard. You know, you know, look at Brett Emerton, for example. He went to Holland, did it hard, ended up, you know, in playing in the English Premier League. And they all did, you know. You know, Vince and Mark had to go at an early age to Empoli. And I'm, you know, speaking close with, you know, been really close with Vince over the last few years. And he said to me, Tony, you go there. They used to kick the hell out of you because you're thought of as an Aussie, even though you're Italian background, you're not. And they did it tough. But they really sort of learned their trade. But, you know, at the moment, you know, you've got the opportunity to play professional, get reasonable, well, good money as a player here now, and then, you know, go overseas. But, you know, 20 out of 26 is not bad.
It's not. And one of the others hasn't set foot in Australia yet, Fran Karacic, the Croatian under-21 international who was called up to the squad. And he's got an Australian passport through his father, but all will be revealed very soon. The Socceroos are into camp as of, I think, Sunday over in Turkey with their three-week camp. Any views on this squad and how they'll go?
Look, tough group. You know, people think, oh, yeah. I think qualifying is fantastic. You know, are we going to make it to the second round? I think if we can get a good result against France and, you know, you're playing first, if you can get a draw, that'll give the confidence. Yeah. You know, when we, you know, sort of lost to, you know, in 2010, we lost to Germany 4-0. That really sort of put a dampener on the whole thing. So it's really, you know, important to get off to a good start. And, you know, people say, oh, you're playing France, but maybe it's good. Maybe you're playing early in the tournament and you can sort of snatch something, fingers crossed. But I think the squad's good. You know, people are smashing the selection of Tim Cahill. I'm not a selector, but I think you've got to take Tim. You know, Tim, regardless of how many minutes play, you throw him in there if needed, and he always delivers. At national level, he delivers. He just lifts. He's a big game player. I think it's unfair, the comments that he's copping, or the criticism he's copping at the moment.
Yeah, he's a freak. He's just defied logic pretty much his whole career, particularly
He'll stick it up to a lot of people, no doubt.
I can see him scoring at the World Cup. I really can.
Yep.
Yeah, very good. Tony, we'll have more after the break. You're listening to Football Q&A with our special guest, Tony Pinata.
Football Q&A with Dave Davutovich from the Herald Sun on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Yes, welcome back to Football Q&A with our special guest, Tony Pinata, new Perth Glory CEO and special friend of FNR. Now, Tony, you start very soon with the Glory. You've given us a little bit of background, but just give us a few little nuggets. What can we expect over in the West over the next few weeks and months?
I think the players should enjoy their 3-4 weeks off, because come June 18, they're going to be on that track with Tony. So
I suspect they shouldn't enjoy it too much, though.
Well, exactly. The skin folds is very notorious, and we play Chelsea on the 23rd of July at Optus Stadium. So I'm really looking forward. 60,000 people there. I was lucky enough to be involved when Chelsea came to Sydney at ANZ, 85,000. Yeah, it'd be good. You know, it'd be great to see who's their new coach. Is it still going to be Conte, or is it maybe it's my club's Serie A club, Sarri, as a new coach? I don't know, but looking forward to that. So, the boys sort of having a bit of a break at the moment. I'm really looking forward to getting there and getting my teeth into it.
So that's sold out, the Chelsea game.
Well, there's still tickets to sell, but we'll sell it out. Mm. We'll get 60,000 there.
And Popovich is the kind of coach who'll be really taking that game seriously.
Well, it's the start of the preseason. The thing with Perth, because of the distance, it's always hard to play some good games. We have to travel a lot. None of these East Coast sides want to come over. But with Jacob Burns there, they've got a good plan. I think we go to KL and Malaysia and Singapore, play a couple of games in August as pre-season. So it's really about getting some good games under the belt and getting them ready for the start of the season. It's very, very important.
Peter Philopoulos, the outgoing CEO, he's done a fantastic job laying some solid foundations for you over there. But one of the real focuses has been the youth focus. And I think only a couple of weeks ago there was the Glory youth team, or one of their youth teams, went over, I think, to Singapore to play in a tournament where they played very well and beat the likes of some of the big clubs. I think Liverpool, they may have beaten, played against Manchester United. We saw Jacob Italiano emerge on the scene. Riley Warland almost became the youngest A-League debutant, although he was an unused sub throughout the course of the season. Is that something that excites you over at the Glory?
Yeah, there's some great talent there, and Jacob, I've watched him play, and I thought, wow, what a great kid, and he's come through the ranks there. So there's a lot of potential coming through that academy, and it's set up well, coaching well. So, hopefully we can unearth a couple of young kids this season.
And I think Jacob Italiano, that is, he's going to help you balance the books, because he's obviously done that deal to join Borussia Mönchengladbach, albeit in a year's time when he turns 18. So I think there was a bit of money up front and a bit paid at the back end, which is will keep the CEO.
Yeah,
happy.
It's all right. I'll spend it somehow. Pop will probably ask for it.
Fantastic. How many spots up for grabs contractually?
I think it's about 6 or 7. So at the moment, the only visa player that's signed is Andy Keogh. So Tony's got to have a good look at the squad and see what he wants to do, and it's great. He's got a good opportunity to make some good decisions and build his squad what he wants.
Diego Castro.
Well, that's Diego. I know Tony's going to catch up with Diego and see exactly what Diego wants to do, and I'll leave that to Tony Popper. Three Tonys, huh?
The three Tonys. Tony Pinata, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for joining us on Football Q&A, and thanks for your contribution on Football Bosses. And who knows, it may even continue from the Wild West.
No, definitely. Thank you, Dave, and you know, all your work you do, and keep up the good work. We need people like you in the game.
Good on you. Good luck. That was Tony Pinata, the new Perth Glory CEO. And you've been listening to Football Q&A. We'll catch you again next week.
Football Q&A with Dave Davutovich from the Herald Sun on FNR Football Nation Radio.